make sure that you pay attention to when this is happening, but also to why it's happening. And if you can eat that protein cornerstone breakfast meal with very few carbs, which is not your average breakfast, that's not what we find on the breakfast aisle. If you can eat that in the morning, you're most likely going to get 3 to 4 hours if you've eaten correctly before that blood sugar. Now, everybody's a little bit different, but I would say pay attention to both of those things because I think what you eat matters and how long you're going between meals matters. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we see that all the time. It's crashing. So the standard American diet is a bowl of sugar with sugar added and dairy inflammation for good measure. And so some people crash by mid-morning. They're having panic attacks. Like we've had clients like that where they're thrown up in the morning and then they're thrown down and they're having panic attacks from low blood sugar. And so let's think out the box here. Let's have some, chicken and vegetables for breakfast or something else, not, high carb. And it changes the whole pattern and their whole health, really. If you've ever wondered, why am I so tired all the time, even when my labs are normal, you're not alone.
And if you're dealing with symptoms like brain fog, hormone imbalances, or autoimmune issues that no one can fully explain, you're in the right place.
Hi, I'm Dr. Justin Lane, doctor of acupuncture, Chinese medicine, and functional medicine.
And I'm Kay Michelle Schroeder, a national board certified health and wellness coach and a certified autoimmune disease specialist.
Together, we help you uncover the root causes behind your chronic health concerns,
so that you can finally understand what's going on and take back control of your health. Hey, Justin, good to see you again today.
Same here, Michelle. How you doing?
Doing good. Just wanted to address today in our podcast a couple of things I hear a lot with our clients. A lot of women are tired in the afternoon. They're waking up in the middle of the night for no good reason that they know. They're having trouble losing weight. And for women, that is so discouraging, especially when they think they're doing everything right, but nothing's changing. They get shaky, irritable, anxious if they don't eat, or really tired after they eat. And they just generally feel older than they think they should, and having really a lot less energy than they want. And so the question I want to talk about today is what is going on? What are some of the reasons this is happening? What are your thoughts?
Well, that's great. Another term we use for that is inflammaging. Inflammation, in other words, oxidative stress does age us. So what you're referencing, though, is a common thing that we see, which is diet and blood sugar irregularities. So, I think at this point, 60, I don't want to misquote the percentage, but I think it's around 3 out of 4 Americans now has blood sugar issues.
Hey, you know what? I just was listening to one of those things the other day, and I heard the number that 88% of Americans have insulin resistance, which is blood sugar.
Yeah,
issues.
That's even higher than I thought.
It's really high.
Yeah, that's really high. So the symptoms that you just explained, these are very common in men and women, particularly, but a lot of women who we work with. And so these are really about our diet. It's about what we're eating, how much we're eating, and how it's affecting our physiology. A lot of times we minimize our diet and its impact on the rest of our health. And, some of that's from traditional thinking and traditional medicine, which often doesn't really acknowledge health or nutrition, let's say, in the role of health and health prevention and wellness. So things are basically in a pharmaceutical model. And, there's just not a lot of education about how to manage your blood sugar and what to look for and what the symptoms are and how it's impacting your health. So just as an example, we have a client that we've been working with who has a lot of concerns with things like anxiety, for example, depression, so more mental health symptoms, but also has symptoms like brain fog and, as you mentioned, weight gain, very common thyroid concerns, aches and pains, blood pressure challenges. And a lot of this, as we dug into her case, was coming back to her diet, what was being consumed and how much and many quantities. And so a lot of this is what's driving inflammation and pain in people.
I noticed we work together a lot. And so many times you'll send somebody over to me and say, get the blood sugar regulated, Michelle, help them with that. And then I'll find that some people just really minimize that need. What is this causing with people, especially in the population of people we deal with? We deal with people that have chronic illness. Why is blood sugar regulation so important for them?
You are what you eat is what we'd say. So your food is your medicine. And I think the key factor that it influences is your, first of all, your metabolism, you know, your energy, but it's your fuel source, right? We have two fuel sources we can use as humans. One is glucose, which is the most common. I commonly compare this to an 85 grade gasoline at the gas station. It's ubiquitous. It's the most common fuel. So most people are fine with it until we're not. Meaning if we have too much of it, we start to develop diabetes on one extreme end. If we have not enough of it, we are hypoglycemic or low blood sugar. And a lot of us, really the majority of people, I'd say, are probably in this roller coaster where it's up and it's down all day. And the symptoms feel like that. Your mood feels like it's up and it's down. So when your blood sugar is not balanced properly, the brain freaks out a little bit. The brain needs stable, steady supplies of glucose. And if it's not getting it, it starts to affect your mood. It affects your neurotransmitters, serotonin and dopamine. Serotonin is your mood molecule. It affects anxiety, symptoms like that, and depression and sadness. And your dopamine is your drive, your motivation, your courage, your libido. So when we start to have blood sugar imbalances, that leads to sex hormone imbalances. And the connection is through a process called aromatization. When women have irregular blood sugar, it activates an enzyme in the ovaries called 1720 lyase, which then converts estradiol, your second primary estrogen, to testosterone. And then women start to develop more masculine characteristics, hair growth in areas we may not want it, etc. So it has a physiological impact on your health, on your mental health, on your hormone health, on your inflammation, specifically in aches and pains, on your sleep. High and low blood sugar affect your ability to stay asleep and wake up and feel refreshed. So it's a linchpin for a lot of people because your diet has so many impacts on the rest of your health.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I know that when people start working with me and we talk about how to regulate blood sugar, they say a lot of times, oh my gosh, I already eat really good. I hardly eat any sugar. And then what I have found is that there are other sources of carbohydrates that they're eating on a regular basis that are keeping them imbalanced. So one of the things I'm always really careful to tell people is to do a couple of really helpful things. Like, so for those of you that think, okay, maybe I do need to balance my blood sugar more, I would say have a protein, especially first thing in the morning. Like I always say, have a cornerstone of protein at every single meal, and also fiber. So protein and vegetables is a really good way to start balancing your blood sugar rather than having like a carbohydrate heavy meal, which is what our society serves in most restaurants. We have like a rice bowl. So the whole bowl is full of rice and there's just a little bit of protein and a little bit of vegetables in there. But in reality, we need more of a protein vegetable bowl and maybe a little bit of rice. So I always try to encourage people to really get that cornerstone of protein in their meal and really balance their meals, and not just one meal a day that way, but like thinking of that every time they eat, whether it's a snack or a meal, they need that cornerstone of protein. And so like from your experience, what else kind of throws blood sugar off? I know you talked a lot about food, but what are some other things?
Stress. Stress is a big one. And stress affects cortisol. Cortisol is your stress hormone. And when there's a perceived stressor, cortisol will get released into the bloodstream and get turned into sugar. That cannot help weight loss. That makes you more weight loss resistant. And that's sometimes the linchpin with some of the clients we've worked with in the past, where we look at what they're eating and how much and quantity. And hey, this looks pretty good. Why? What's going on? And we find those folks are under a tremendous amount of stress, whether they recognize it or not. But we see it and we have labs usually to support that.
Well, basically what their body is doing is responding as though there's some kind of thing that is about to eat them. And then they don't finish that cycle of stress because they don't run away from anything. And so their body's just preparing as though they were, you know, being attacked by a dog or something like that. And their body's preparing for it, but as though that's happening, but then they're not running away from it and using up all that blood sugar. So do you want to explain that a little bit better?
Well, no, I think that's it. You go into fight or flight. You have adrenaline typically released, and you know it suppresses appetite, but it also suppresses your metabolism. Those are, in terms of weight loss, if that's a goal, that's going to be a challenge. And so here's the issues, right? We always say, well, we all have stress. Stress is a normal part of life. There's healthy stress. There's unhealthy stress. Some humans, stress affects us differently. You know, for some, it's a headache. For others, it might be weight loss resistance. For others, they can't sleep. So it affects us different. We call it non-adapted stress response. It's just, how does stress affect us in particular? And it affects us in different ways. And it's hard for you to see as the person affected sometimes. But there's clues, and there's also symptoms I wanted to talk about when we talk about blood sugar imbalance, which has to do with, what are the symptoms? What are the clues that I have a problem with my blood sugar? And the most common symptoms we see are going to be energy changes around mealtimes. That's a big one. A lot of people start to lose energy, get irritable, lightheaded, dizzy, maybe blurry vision, but tired, nauseous. And then food comes and, you know, the Red Sea just parted. They feel a ton better. Now they might get tired after they eat a little while later, or they have trouble losing weight, or they're up a lot with poor sleep, or their frequent urination. These are all high blood sugar. So we're on this roller coaster a lot of times. The key symptoms are energy changes and things like cravings for sugar or salt. Those are the more important symptoms. There's a lot of others, but those are the key ones where people go, I just can't figure this out. I'm tired. I'm not tired. I have symptoms. I eat. I feel a little bit better. But then I notice my mood is changing. I have more brain fog. I have more pain. So they're all connected, in other words. And so those are the common things that you'll see or experience when you have a blood sugar imbalance. And to your point, Michelle, it's the hidden sugars that really get people. It's not the obvious sugars. It's the not so obvious sugars.
Yeah. And another hidden sugar could be alcohol. What we drink needs to be really paid attention to. I think that the majority of people that have blood sugar dysregulation are drinking things like soda, alcohol, you know, different things, juice.
Too much fruit juice. Yeah. Fruit juice is a killer, and it's your sugar without the fiber in it. So
that's something that people miss, and they're not really aware that they're doing it. And it seems like we have a society that's just based on keeping that dopamine going. I mean, who doesn't love sugar? I do. Sometimes I'm in the mood for something sweet. And here's another thing that I notice is a lot of people do pretty good during the day when they're busy and they're working, but then all hell breaks loose at night. Like they have a dinner, and then afterwards they just keep on snacking. And then the next thing you know, they're getting up to use the bathroom a lot at night, or they're waking up for unknown reasons. Can you kind of explain the connection there? One thing I've learned working with women struggling with chronic illness is this. Most people don't fail because they don't care about their health. They fail because they're overwhelmed and exhausted and confused and trying to change too many things at once, and they don't have the right support. Real healing often requires more than information. It requires sustainable behavior change, emotional support, nervous system regulation, and learning how to work with your body instead of against it. That's the work I help women do every single day. If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels and start making meaningful progress, you can learn more about coaching with me at the link in the show notes.
Yeah, so a lot of times people will eat dinner, let's say early, fairly early, 5, 6, 7 o'clock, normal dinner time, and then don't eat again until the next day, maybe at 12, 2, 3, 4, and their bodies may not tolerate that very well. So what happens is your blood sugars drop through the night when we're asleep, and at some point, there's a threshold that can get crossed. So when sugars drop too low, the brain wants to keep us asleep. The brain needs stable, steady glucose to keep us asleep. So if our blood sugars drop too low during sleep, the brain turns to the adrenal gland and asks for a squirt of cortisol. Cortisol can get manufactured into sugar and keep the brain satisfied until you wake up in the morning. Well, now if you have cortisol imbalances, let's say your cortisol's low. So the backup plan to the backup plan, you don't have cortisol. So we're going to wake you up now, and we're going to wake you up in fight or flight. So this is running from the dragon, so to speak. It's a norepinephrine, epinephrine response. It's an adrenal response. And now you're awake. It's 3 in the morning, could be 3 in the afternoon. And you're like, I don't understand this. Why is this happening? That's why it's happening.
Yeah. And I've worked with some people that actually wake up feeling like they're having a panic attack. And that could be part of the issue with it. You mentioned a minute ago, like you're talking about intermittent fasting. Like you were saying, like you eat at 7 and then you don't eat again till later, which, you know, there's a lot of good that that can do for managing blood sugar. But how do you know if you are somebody who is on that side where you need to have a snack before you go to bed to keep from crashing in the middle of the night? Or if you're somebody who needs to like do some intermittent fasting in order to lower your blood sugar, like what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, so that's why it's really an individual situation because, you know, generally what we find is folks that are a little heavier set, they're more on the high blood sugar side. They may have more trouble falling asleep because of the high blood sugar. They're overstimulated, but can often, you know, sleep through the night. They have to get up and use the restroom usually because of the high blood sugar. So they're waking up because they have to pee, essentially. Now, those folks, again, typically have more trouble with falling asleep, and they're waking up because they have the urge to urinate. Those, in general, are your high blood sugar folks. Now, your low blood sugar folks are the folks that are waking up wide awake typically because they tend to be a little more thin and lanky in terms of a body type, not always, but they're having blood sugar drops through sleep and they don't have enough cortisol. We often see low cortisol, low blood sugar patterns, high blood sugar, high cortisol patterns. And then sometimes we're seeing both because it's a roller coaster. But for the folks who don't tend to gain weight very well, we talk about weight gain, weight loss. Some folks, low blood sugar, they have a hard time keeping weight on. They often wake up during the night because their sugars drop too low, their cortisol is too low, and then they're wide awake. So a strategy that we use is to stabilize blood sugar through the night by having a small snack at bedtime. And it's a protein, a healthy fat, depending on the person, maybe a healthy carb included, but it's not a meal. It's just it's a snack to get you through sleep, essentially. And we've had some good success with that. It's just a level of awareness of your own body and what's happening. And that's often just a starting point to understand, hey, we need to regulate your blood sugar a little more. The keys during the day, Michelle, that clients will notice. And the first thing I usually ask them, and we work with people, is say, hey, how many hours go by during the day until you start to get low blood sugar symptoms? And here are your symptoms. You answered them in our survey. We know exactly what they are. Pay attention. How many hours go by? Is it 4 hours, 5 hours, 3 hours, 2 hours? Whatever that time frame is, we discover we want you eating and prepared 30 minutes before that. So we're not getting the symptoms anymore.
Yeah. And I would add to that, you have to look at what did you eat at your last meal? Because if you're only getting by for an hour and a half since you had pancakes with syrup or cereal for breakfast, one of those high carbohydrate breakfasts, then it may not be that too much time is going by. It's just that you have just now triggered a high insulin response. You've raised your blood sugar and now it has just completely dropped and your body is screaming for more blood sugar. So there's what Justin just said, make sure that you pay attention to when this is happening, but also to why it's happening. And if you can eat that protein cornerstone breakfast meal with very few carbs, which is not your average breakfast, that's not what we find on the breakfast aisle. If you can eat that in the morning, you're most likely going to get 3 to 4 hours if you've eaten correctly before that blood sugar. Now, everybody's a little bit different, but I would say pay attention to both of those things because I think what you eat matters and how long you're going between meals matters. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we see that all the time. It's crashing. So the standard American diet is a bowl of sugar with sugar added and dairy inflammation for good measure. And so some people crash by mid-morning. They're having panic attacks. Like we've had clients like that where they're thrown up in the morning and then they're thrown down and they're having panic attacks from low blood sugar. And so hey, let's think out the box here. Let's have some, you know, chicken and vegetables for breakfast or something else, not, you know, high carb. And it changes the whole pattern and their whole health, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah. And we started out with that at the very beginning of different health problems that come as a result of this up and down blood sugar. There's a couple I see a lot. One of them is PCOS. And I would just really love it if you could explain to folks out there that have that hormone issue, kind of like, how does blood sugar play a role in PCOS?
Yeah, really, it is PCOS. There's no, it's a blood sugar disorder, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which I think they just recently changed the name again. Well, it's the number one cause of infertility in younger women, for sure. It causes irregular cycles, irregular menstrual cycles because of the blood sugar imbalance. That mechanism we just talked about, where it activates in women's ovaries 17-20 lyase, it starts to convert estradiol to testosterone, and the development of cysts on the ovaries with insulin receptor sites. So, and it often leads to high testosterone in women and high DHEA. In fact, many conventional doctors don't even do an ultrasound on the ovaries. If you have a woman with high testosterone and high DHEA, they often will diagnose PCOS without looking at cysts, although I still recommend, you know, getting an ultrasound and seeing that. But that's the direct impact. It's the irregular blood sugar from our diets leading to the hormones getting skewed, estradiol to testosterone, which leads to the cysts on the ovaries, which eventually leads to infertility or irregular cycles, and then obviously infertility. So it's a big problem, and it's a very solvable problem if it's caught and addressed early on. Of course, that's not being done in primary care. We often prescribe metformin and call it a day. There's, and that's a blood sugar regulating drug, which actually berberine outperforms with a lot less side effects. But in any event, they're throwing a drug at the problem without teaching people what to do with their diet and their nutrition.
And now they're also getting prescribed peptides for GLP-1s for, especially if there's obesity going on with all of that. And instead of learning, hey, you guys, you got control of your life here. You have control of your diet. This matters. And then let's just say that, you know, either we didn't have PCOS or we didn't know we had it and we went through life. Maybe we even had a child or two. Talk about menopause. Like, how does this blood sugar affect hormones during menopause?
Yeah. So it's a similar mechanism in older women, meaning you can, through poor blood sugar control, poor diet, you can convert your estrogen to testosterone. And a common thing that I see more and more of is women of all ages, young and older, coming in with a lot of low thyroid symptoms. So brain fog, and I'm short-term memory, and I'm tired, and I'm gaining weight, and I'm maybe have slow motility or constipation. I feel cold and my hair is falling out. All these low thyroid symptoms, which get you to a doctor. And what's often, and in my world, because we run a full thyroid panel, we can see what's going on. And, you know, we might look at with a client like that and go, your thyroid looks fine. You're producing plenty of hormones. It's not a thyroid issue, but you have too high estrogen. Your estrogen is out competing your thyroid hormones to get their products to the cell. So whether you're a younger woman on birth control or an older woman on hormone replacement therapy, high estrogen levels mimic hypothyroidism. So the symptoms would be the same. So you come in, you have all the low thyroid symptoms, but it's actually an estrogen problem. So that's actually very common, particularly with younger women and menopausal women. But the blood sugar connection feeds into that, because the blood sugar will just continue. You know, a lot of women are on estrogen and they're just making more testosterone out of it, which is compounding the problem. So that's very common.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I do see, because I'm the one that kind of helps people know what to eat and how to alter their diet. And one of the first things I notice, people report back to me 1 or 2 weeks of regulating blood sugar. Oh my gosh, my energy's better. I'm like not as puffy. I didn't drop much weight, but I can tell I feel lighter. This is what I hear women say. And really the main thing they've changed is how they're composing their meals. They're getting more protein, more vegetables, and less, especially refined carbohydrates. But even sometimes I have them slow down on things like sweet potatoes and things like that, even if they're already eating healthy, just to get their blood sugar balanced. Not saying that that's a bad food, but usually the refined carbohydrates, you take that out and you start eating only complex carbohydrates, and you start eating protein and vegetables and drinking water rather than soda, and all that problem goes away.
It really does. You know, we know sugar is, it's either three to five times more addicting than cocaine, and it's added to almost everything. So we teach our clients to be rated, label readers. You almost need a PhD and to know what the heck is in your food these days. A lot of this started, Michelle, about 40 years ago in the 80s, Harvard funded a huge study for, or the, excuse me, the sugar industry funded Harvard to do a huge study on the ills of fat. And in the 80s, I remember that almost like yesterday, things went overnight to low fat, no fat, skim. We took fat out of food. We became fat phobic. And at the same time, we increased the sugar in our food system. And gee, no surprise that blood sugar and diabetes have skyrocketed since that time.
Yeah, because we want flavor, right? So we put the sugar in place of the fat. That is not a good strategy. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, but that's exactly what happened. So the standard of care adapted to that. The food pyramid, you know, shifted once again into, you know, a carb-centric model and a fat phobic or a very small amount of fat. And it's just incredible misunderstandings. Now, some might say that could be by design, because if you have a sicker population, you're going to prescribe more medications, but I'm not going to go there, but it's just, it was a bad decision. Let's just say that it, you know, we see the skyrocketing in foreign countries too. You see it, the trend's the same.
All over the world. It's not just, some people think it's just the United States that has this problem. That's not true. They have a huge problem in Asia as well.
We've exported some of it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think just to kind of sum things up, I would say, I don't remember how you put it, but blood sugar is kind of at the top of all of this.
Upstream from your hormones. Yeah.
Upstream. Yep. Upstream from hormones. So like if you think you have a hormone imbalance, or you think you have thyroid issues, or you're not sleeping well, or you've got mood issues, those are the primary things that drive people to get help. They may have labs that look okay at their regular doctor, but when you
which aren't comprehensive enough.
Yes. But even sometimes you can do your labs and you can see, hey, no, you're producing plenty of thyroid. That's not your issue. That I hear women say, well, I came because I thought my thyroid was kind of messed up, but I found out my thyroid's fine. And then we go into some of these deeper things. We manage stress. We make sure they're sleeping good, but we all start with blood sugar regulation every single time. So just if there's a take home from this podcast, it's figure out how to eat so you're not spiking your blood sugar all the time. And of course, we are here to help with your specific situations if you wish to connect with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the main thing is awareness. Just being aware of what's coming in the body and what impact it's having. Everything has consequences. So it's just being aware, I think, is the first thing, and then taking some action to correct it.
So quit crashing with your energy, have your best life, and we will see you in the next podcast.
All right. Healthy dreams. Thanks so much for listening. We're really glad you're here.
If you're feeling stuck, overwhelmed, confused, or just tired of not having answers and you know something's not right, just know there is a reason and there is a way forward. You don't have to keep guessing or figure this out on your own.
If you're ready to start getting real answers and understand what's really going on in your body, check out the links in the show notes to learn more about working with us.
And if this episode helped you, be sure to follow the show on your favorite podcast platform or subscribe on YouTube and share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. And just a quick reminder that the information shared in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice. We always recommend working with a qualified healthcare provider to determine what's best for your individual needs.
We'll see you in the next episode as you continue to take control of your health.